Inside Outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. Inside Outdoors with Don Jordan, Buddy Bill, and Rich Reardon gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors, hunting, fishing, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues, and just down-home family fun. Inside Outdoors is an enjoyable and informative way to learn about what nature has to offer and how to be a good steward. You can find us at InsideOutdoorsRadio.com, and we invite you to write in about your fish stories, outdoor stories, favorite places, questions, or just about anything you want us to talk about on the show. So sit back with Buddy Bill, Don, and Rich for another episode of Inside Outdoors.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you by Morrison's Appliance.
That's right, Morrison's Appliances and Service on West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington, Indiana. Serving Monroe County since 1954 with eco-friendly service, pickup, and delivery at 900 West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington. For more info, visit Morrison's Appliances and Service.com.
Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
It's Inside Outdoors. This is old Don Jordan here.
Hey, and Rich Reardon, and good morning. It's a beautiful day today. I know you're saying it's still a little cold, but it seemed like pretty balmy to me.
Well, it's never going to be warm enough until it's at least 70.
Well, I was trying to say I'm just kind of trying to think positively, but let me see what kind of temperature we got right now. Looks like about 43 degrees.
So went up.
That's
three
not
since
too bad.
I came in. It was 40 when I left the house.
Well, we always seem to be a little warmer in Bloomington downtown, but
that's because all the hot air coming out of City Hall down here.
Right, and here.
And here, yes, there's quite a bit of it originating here. And not so much with just the two of us here this morning.
But no.
Oh, Buddy Bill's absent without leave this morning.
Yeah, he's been a little bit under the weather, but he's doing better.
Well, I'm surely glad to hear that, and we'll be glad to have him back with his biscuits and gravy.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes. And outdoor-wise, why don't you give your little weather report?
Well,
we got some weather coming today, I guess.
I think we do. We've got, it says chance of showers, then more showers. So that sounds pretty much like that's what's going to happen. But we do have a beautiful high of 59. That's not too far off your 70-degree mark where you'll feel comfortable. So
no, not too far, only
10 degrees.
11 degrees.
Yeah, 11 degrees. So okay. We're having a chance of showers today and then thunderstorm after 1. You know, looking like we're going to have pretty much rain and thunder showers all day. So.
Rain and thunder showers, oh boy.
And then we get back into sort of a mostly cloudy, partly sunny, whichever. I think they switch off each day and they say sunny, cloudy. So, but it looks like about the same all week and hovering right around 40-degree mark. So.
Well, I turned on the Weather Channel this morning before I came in, and boy, it looks like they're going to get pounded out like Iowa, Nebraska, across there. There's a big winter storm. It's narrow,
right,
but it's real long, and it's traveling fast.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a dark magenta color on the snow map, so I think that's bad.
That's bad.
Yeah. There could be a lot of snow there. Of course, Iowa, they're used to snow. And oh, by the way, speaking of Iowa, what do you hear from our old buddy out there?
Well, not too much in the winter, but they had a pretty good crops last year. What I'm really interested in talking to him about is how soybean prices and stuff have fared since the tariff war that we're having to beat the Chinese into oblivion.
What did they find?
Well, I haven't really talked to him about it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wanting to, so I can find that out.
Well, I hear it's starting to impact them.
I think it is.
Because, you know, they're just now...
Well, now's when they have to buy the seed and get going, and that's where they're going to feel it.
And the futures will be kicking in now, you know, the futures prices and whatnot. So.
Yep.
You expect the price of beans to not go up, I'd say.
Pretty much.
The China's our biggest customer for soybeans, of course, but our own fake fuel industry eats up all the corn, I guess.
Yeah, they have all that ethanol gas out there, but I never buy it.
Hey, I got a Lake Monroe level here.
Well, we got about a minute. Go right ahead.
Okay, it's 556. Normal pool's 538.
Wow.
So
pretty hollow.
Oh, no, 552.7 it is right now.
Oh, that's down a little, yeah.
552.7, but it's still up in that 550 area. So, you know, getting a lot more rain, we might see some overflowage again this year. Never know.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story when we get back, but we're going to take a quick break right here and let you know where we're coming from. We'll be right back. Listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and me, Rich Reardon. We'll be back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break. This is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 109.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And as I was just saying, we're looking at right around 43 degrees in downtown Bloomington. Going to have showers and thunderstorms all day, so stay low. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon. Hey, we are back.
We are back. I didn't get my biscuits and gravy.
No, that was a quick one. And I promised to tell you a story. I lost a limb off a tree in the backyard. Remember that high wind we had about a week ago?
Yes.
So that kind of was unsettling, but it wasn't too bad. Didn't hurt anything too bad except for a fence.
Didn't hit any. Oh, just hit a fence.
Hit a fence. But
well, if it's going to hit something, that's the thing to hit.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But, boy, that was some weather we've been having out out in the wilds of Harrodsburg.
Well, it's been pretty wild and woolly weather all over the country this so far this month.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have that predicted late February storm. Maybe this is it that's coming through today.
It could be.
Could have been the one that they predicted. Of course, they don't really know. But, boy, it's they're talking flooding down in Nashville again on the Cumberland River. It's out of its banks right now. They showed it on TV this morning.
Yeah.
So right there at the football stadium, you know, where you drive past on I-40 going through Nashville, water was way out of its banks. And not up in the parking lot at the football stadium, but a lot of water there. And they showed shots from Arkansas. Streets are flooded. Mississippi, streets are flooded.
Yeah.
Texas, streets are flooded. So, got a lot of rain.
Yeah.
A lot of rain. The weather station woman said that average-wise throughout the country this year, we have 11 inches of rain this month.
Mm.
That's a foot of rain.
Yeah, that's
already
a lot.
This month.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of rain.
No kidding.
So, yeah, you won't have to worry about your garden being wet to start off the season.
No, it's my yard is quite damp right now.
And speaking of which, you know, we were talking about gardening before the show. It's that time of year to start thinking about gardening. If you are a gardener, you know that this is in the old days, this is when you'd go out and you'd cut all the brush that remained from your last year's garden and put it in a pile, set it on fire, and burn it on the surface of the ground where you're going to plant your early crops, your lettuce and your radishes and whatnot, you know. They can survive a little frost, so that just warms the ground up so the seeds will germinate a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that's what farmers have done for years and years and years. And it's time to start thinking about that and thinking about what you're going to do on the tomato blight this year.
Well, we were talking about that. I don't know. It'd be interesting if anybody's out there. It's 812-323-1200. But I wonder how your tomatoes did last year, because We had at least two of us had pretty bad problem with blight.
Oh, and I've been having it for 4 or 5 years now, and so have other people I know. I mean, it's just it's such a mystery. You try about the only thing I've found that does any good at all is changing ground every year. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can plant your tomatoes in a different place than you planted them the year before, they seem to resist or they hold off catching the blight until later in the year. So you might get some tomatoes, you know,
right,
instead of zero tomatoes.
And like you were saying, those early girls or something.
Right, that come right before the blight can get them. That blight seems to set in later in the summer, you know.
Well, and you said something interesting that maybe they're coming from the
bedding
wherever you get them.
Right,
you know,
the bedding plants. I can't think of any other explanation. I've been growing tomatoes for a long time and never have had the problems I've had in the last 5 to 6 years growing tomatoes here in Bloomington.
Hmm.
I grew up in Indianapolis, and we had a garden in our backyard. We grew big, beautiful tomatoes, you know. Still are, as far as I know, but what's going on here? What is this? The Monroe County Extension agent out there, I'd sure like to hear from you.
Yeah.
If you have any information on this, I'd like you to share it with all of us, because it really is a problem. Now, I haven't noticed any other plants suffering from any disease-like symptoms. You know, our rhubarb's doing okay. You know, the asparagus is doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, do you know what snowdrops are? Little flowers that come up February?
Yeah.
They're up.
Oh.
Snowdrops are up. So, boy, March is soon to arrive.
Soon to arrive, a week from yesterday.
March. Well, you know, for about, I suppose, 30 years, I kept records on largemouth bass caught at Lake Monroe. And over those years, it turned out that far and away, the most big bass, and by big bass, I'm saying 7 pounds and over. Oh, okay. I'll get back to you. I guess Rich is telling me we got a call. Maybe this somebody can tell us about our tomatoes. Hello.
Hello, how are you there?
Hey, yeah. Hey, this is John over in Owen County.
Hi, John.
I've called you guys a few times. I agree completely on the tomatoes. I think for the last 5 or 6 years, I've had to move them around, and I finally, I live by myself now, so I actually switched to containers. And that's been the only thing that's helped my tomatoes.
Is that right? You grow them on your porch?
Yep. I got a couple containers out further than the porch that are longer containers.
Uh-huh.
That way I can change the soil or add to it almost every year, and that's the only thing that's helped me.
Well, I believe that I've heard other people say that. I know a friend of mine, Dennis, was using containers. And tell me about your container setup. I know some people have tubes going down in them to feed water into them, or do you just...
No, I ordered 3 from a company that there's a water system built into the container where you water it on the side.
Ah.
And I don't remember the name of the company, but I'm sure they're on the internet. I've had those for a few years now, and I just... dump them over in the winter so they don't freeze up, and they've lasted a long time. And a couple of my other containers are just big buckets.
Big buckets, big plastic buckets?
Yeah, that I have to water.
Uh-huh.
But as long as I'm home a lot, so I take care of that. But that's the only thing that's helped my tomatoes. I never have figured. I've bought fungicide. I've bought all kinds of stuff.
Boy, me too, John. It's just very frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, because that's something I grew for 40 years and didn't have a problem with.
Yeah, now we do. I haven't seen anything written about this, you know. Have you run across anything, articles?
I haven't seen anything helpful.
Right.
I have seen people comment on it, and some of them talk about fungicides and changing the soil and sterilizing the soil and all that. And I even tried that with black plastic, trying to heat the soil up and
yes,
let it sterilize, but I'm not a big gardener anymore, but it just kind of irritates me that tomatoes are difficult now.
Well, especially, you know, one of the very best things we have in Indiana is our tomatoes. You know, you go to another state up north, first thing they ask you when they find out if you're from Indiana, they say, did you bring any tomatoes with you?
Yeah, well, we make our own ketchup. We got all kinds of stuff here with tomatoes.
Well, that's right.
The commercial guys are probably doing it, but they're probably using chemicals and stuff that I don't know about.
Uh-huh. I bet it's a plot. They're trying to run us all out of the tomato business so they'll have the market open for
them. Oh, there's so damn many plots anymore, I don't even try to think about it. But you're probably right. Well, I just wanted to give you my 2 cents worth.
Hey, what kind of tomatoes do you usually plant?
I try a mixture. Like everybody else, the only thing that's just hardy as hell and works real good are cherry tomatoes.
Yeah.
Not any brand. But I do the big boys, big girls, better boys, better girls. I've even tried some heritage models. I just try to kind of mix them up to see what's going to have a good year.
You get a better result out of any of them?
Well, I do better with the actual promoted ones, like Better Girl and Big Boy.
Uh-huh.
But I've had a couple of heritage tomatoes that did pretty well. And so I'm not against that at all. They grow them supposedly from old-time seeds and all that.
Right.
I've had a couple of them do well. But I don't spend a lot of money on them. I just go out and kind of look around, see what's available, and buy what I'm going to try.
Well, that's about all you can do is keep going till somebody figures out what's going on with these tomatoes.
Well, I don't know if anybody figured it out, you know. The insect population changes every year. Used to have trouble with those huge tomato worms.
Right.
Don't have any trouble with them anymore. Maybe it's because the plants aren't that good. I don't know.
Well, I have trouble with. I don't have tomato hornworms either. Like you say, you used to always have them.
Yeah,
but I've got those little.
Go out and pick them off.
Those little box bugs, you know, that stick their proboscis in your tomato and leave that little white scar in them. You know.
Right.
Those are everywhere.
I put a little 7 powder. On my plants every now and then, that's all I do for insects, and that seems to work pretty well, but I don't think it's insects. I think it's a blight, like you said, or a disease that we don't have a handle on yet.
I believe you're right. I wish somebody would, with all this agricultural research going on out there, you'd think that somebody would come up with an answer for us, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, and I heard you ask for somebody to call in from one of the agricultural offices, and I think they ought to know something about this, whether they're telling us or not.
Well, they may be that they're embarrassed that they don't know anything about it.
Yeah, you got a point there.
Hey, well, thanks for calling in. We got to take a break here, and but we do appreciate hearing about your tomatoes.
Enjoy your show.
All right. Thanks.
So, we'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break here, and like Buddy Bill says, get yourself a cup of coffee and some eggs, I guess, would be good this morning, and kiss your mommy good morning.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
This is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 109.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. Right now we have 43 degrees in Bloomington. It's going to basically be a wet day. It's a chance of showers and then showers likely all in the afternoon, but mostly towards the evening we're going to get into some thunderstorms and kind of nasty stuff. The rest of the week we're looking at 42, hovering right around the 40s most of the week with mostly cloudy or partly sunny conditions. So kind of a nice week. It could be a little warmer, but at least it's not storming too bad. But we'll be seeing some storms tonight and Sunday. This is Inside Outdoors. We'll be right back.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
I resemble that.
That's us. Oh, boy. Yeah. I miss Buddy Bill because, you know, he fits right in there with us, too.
Well, we miss Buddy
Bill.
Give
a shout out to Buddy Bill right now. And if you're listening, Bill, hope to see you next week. I hope you're feeling better.
If I was him, I'd probably still be asleep.
I probably would be, too.
Well, one of the things that this is a kind of a carryover from last week. For some reason, in the last couple of weeks, there's been a whole bunch of stories in a wide range of publications, everything from Newsweek to USA Today, about what they're calling zombie disease.
Yeah.
Which is actually chronic wasting disease, which we've been reporting about here for years now.
Seems to have just started, this zombie deer thing. You
yes.
know? Just a few weeks ago, I saw that for the first time.
Yes, my wife saw it and said, what's this zombie deer stuff? And I didn't have any idea. Of course, when you look, you see that's what it is. It's chronic wasting disease. And so we've had a lot of rundown stories. And here's something, very little new info. Well, here's finally some new info here. This is headlined. This is out of USA Today. And that was published February the 21st, so pretty recent. The headline says, in 2005, 200 people ate zombie deer meat, quote-unquote zombie deer meat.
Right.
Here's what happened, okay? On March 13, 2005, a fire company in Oneida County, New York, fed the meat of a deer that tested positive for chronic wasting disease to 200 to 250 people. The company didn't know the meat was from a diseased deer, I guess. I hope. A laboratory test for one of the deer served came back positive for CWD. Okay? Because little was known what would happen to people who eat infected meat, the county health department there monitored this group through a surveillance project. 80 people who ate the venison agreed to participate, together with the State University of New York at Binghamton. Health experts checked with the group of mostly white males over the course of 6 years to see whether they developed any unusual symptoms. In the study published in Public Health Journal, researchers found the group had no significant changes in health conditions. So they did report eating less venison after the whole ordeal.
I bet.
But anyway, the things they found, they say, were observed typical kinds of things with age, you know, hypertension, arthritis. So they're saying there was nothing. Here's the thing. According to when we switch around and talk to some other people about this, this is in this same article. Right now this is Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. Scientists believe there is pretty strong species barrier, which means that it's unlikely the disease will jump to new species, right? So they don't think it will. However, according to a guy, another CWD guy from University of Minnesota, and the Disease Research and Policy Institute at Minnesota, says it's probable that humans will come down with the disease after eating meat in the years ahead. And the reason why they say it's probable is they have fed contaminated meat to monkeys, and the monkeys caught CWD. So, as you know, we're pretty closely related to monkeys, and monkeys can get it, we can get it. And there's also been, you remember the British example here, has been a decade or more,
right,
where 150 people came down with mad cow disease, which is just very similar, if not exactly the same thing as chronic wasting disease, only in cattle, in domestic cattle. That's what they call it.
Is this showing up in any other countries?
Well, it has. Actually, the first case, didn't know what it was the kuru disease in New Guinea. People there developed this disease just like chronic wasting disease, same symptoms, same eats leaves holes in your brain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they got it from eating, now get this, you sitting down, everybody?
Uh-huh.
They were cannibals, and it wasn't that they were eating humans for meat or anything. It was part of their afterlife thing that you wanted to eat the brains of your dead relatives, right? And by guys, the people that ate those brains of their dead relatives ended up getting this kuru and dying from it. And it's turned out that kuru is, again, under the microscope, looks just like chronic wasting disease. And the weird thing about these diseases, if you think they're all different, is that it's caused by a protein. Nothing but a protein. It's not even a living organism, right? And it inserts itself in normal proteins in your body and causes this disease. Nobody has any idea how it works. There's no vaccines and there's no treatment. And right now, you could come down with Alzheimer's and actually have chronic wasting disease. And they'll never know until they start testing people who die of Alzheimer's, so they start looking at their brains, which people are not going to want to do, I'd say.
Sure.
So it's going to be hard to get data on this, but it's certainly something to keep your eyes on. Right now we're in the in-between seasons, and you got to keep your eyes peeled on, you know, watch the deer you see around and see how they're acting and how they look. You know, if they look bedraggled and listless and look like they can barely walk, they might have chronic wasting disease. And report that to the DNR and see if you can get somebody out there to take it in and test it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, you can't. There's no test for the disease in a living animal, so you got to have a dead animal to even test for it.
Mm.
So it's a story seems to be getting bigger every week, and it's not even deer season.
Well, I saw some pictures about it, and it seems like they are pretty messed up when they get to the full stage where they're really showing the symptoms, and so you can probably pretty much tell if one has it.
This little article says that most deer that get infected die before they get to the full symptomatic stage, so you might not even know it. You know, you find a dead deer, they might have died of CWD, and you didn't even know it. So, you know, it's a problem. And it's something for all of you hunters, us hunters. I guess I still include myself as a hunter. But it's something for anybody who eats deer, eats venison, if you want to call it that. And it also affects the other cervids. And the cervids are deer, elk, reindeer, and moose.
Right.
All four of those, they say Sitka deer is a different species, but it's just another deer, you know. You ever seen a Sitka deer?
Well, in pictures.
Well, they live in the Northwest, you know. They're cute little things. They're smaller than our deer, and they're kind of dark and have little ears on them. They're kind of cute. But anyway, that's something to put on your back burner and think about when you go to eat a deer and when you go deer hunting this year, and whether you want your kids to eat this deer. I don't want to warn you off of it because it's a source of good, cheap protein for a lot of people. And, of course, until we know one way or the other, you hate to say.
Yeah, right? Well, it's definitely something to think about, but fortunately we don't really have it yet in full bloom here.
No, we don't.
But that doesn't mean you couldn't run into it.
They did go through a little rundown here that's pointing out that, as we said last week, the first CWD cases were found in Colorado from captive deer in Colorado.
Right.
And it spread from there. It took quite a while for it to get out of Colorado, but boy, once it did, well, we know now it's in New York.
Yep.
You know, it's in New York, it's in Illinois, it's Michigan, Wisconsin. Wisconsin's bad. And actually, Wisconsin may be one of the worst places. And that was from escaped captive deer. So got to have those captive deer places to keep those canned hunters up in Chicago happy so they can get their $20,000 buck and hang it on the wall.
Right.
And not meaning, I don't mean that everybody from Chicago is a hunting bum, but, you know, we always associate big city people with depredations on wildlife, but may not be fair. So, on the meanwhile, I'll reserve my opinion on people.
Well, you can
Chicago.
Keep it. You can keep it straight there with the canned hunters. So, because it doesn't matter where you're from, if you're doing that, it's a bad thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, right. Well, in any case, that's the deal, folks. And I saw three deer this morning. It's a doe and her two grown fawns that she had this year, and
yeah.
They made it through the deer season just fine. They look pretty healthy. So I guess there's still some healthy deer around these parts. Well,
this is the time of year you're going to see more of them starting to come out because they're hungry, and you know, it's been a long winter. They're out looking for what the feast of the spring when it starts budding. They're running around having a good time.
Yes, and there's really nobody's hunting them now. So, right. They feel a lot more free to walk around and whatnot. So you're likely to start seeing deer again now that the hunting season uproar has died.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. We got other stuff going on. Oh, hey. Remember those hunting and fishing guidebooks that you used to be able to pick up every place, you know, bait shops and everything, and then they disappeared? Well, here we go. Your guide to Indiana's best values is available now from the DNR. So you have to go on the internet to order one. However, you can go today and I believe yet tomorrow up to Indianapolis to the fairgrounds, and the Indianapolis Boat Sport Travel Show is going on. DNR has a big booth there where you can actually pick up a paper copy of one of these hunting and fishing guides. So that's one good reason to go to the boat show. That's what we used to call it, the boat show. I never hear about it anymore, you know.
Well, Bill used to go up there.
Well, I used to go every year, but that used to be a big thing, and they advertised it. And the first I've seen about it is this DNR news release I got here today.
Yeah, I haven't heard about it anywhere.
It says through February 24th. I believe this is the 23rd, isn't it?
23rd today.
23rd. So tomorrow's the last day, and you can also get state park passes there. I guess lots of stuff. And they have a big booth there, and you can find out anything you want to know from the DNR. Things that they might know about up there this year. So, just a reminder, you know where the state fairgrounds is? It's on 38th Street. Can't really miss it. You go up,
right.
take 465 west and north to get to 38th Street, take 38th Street exit, go across White River and down a few more blocks, and there it is. Can't miss it. On the left-hand side. And pretty easy to find. What else we got here today?
Well, they've been doing that for years. It's, you know, it isn't too hard to get to either.
No, the fairgrounds is very easy to get to, actually. People who are from there have been to the state fairgrounds so many times. It's because I grew up near there, so we know where that is. Okay, I got a, what is this story? This must be, February 16th. Carroll County man injured while hunting on February 16th. Officers, unintentional shooting occurred in southern Carroll County. Approximately 11 a.m., received 911 call. A man had been shot while rabbit hunting. Now, that's right, rabbit season was open. Investigators determined three men had been hunting an abandoned railroad bed. Michael Clendenning was using a 12-gauge shotgun, and when he took a shot at a running rabbit, he did not see another hunter. But Nathaniel Steele hunting the same area. After Clendenning fired the shot, Steele fell to the ground and yelled that he had been shot. It was estimated, that's not funny, he estimated that Steele was 10 yards away from him when he was shot. How could you miss that?
Ouch.
Clendenning and another hunter quickly rendered aid, and Steele's request drove him home. Once home, emergency services were called. IU Health Methodist Hospital, non-life-threatening injuries. The three hunters were legally hunting and were wearing required orange clothing, so no laws were broken. But the guy was only 10 yards away from him. How do you miss a guy in orange 10 yards away from you?
By not being careful.
He put a little too much lead on that rabbit, I guess.
Man.
Anyway. So he's got hunting accidents happening, and the hunting season's over. Well, for all practical purposes. Let's see what else we got going on. Another DNR news release. You want to need firewood? Well, there's a Shackamack State Park over by Jasonville is having opportunities to harvest firewood.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you'd have to call them up, see what they're offering. And what else we got here? Visit the Indiana Boat Travel Show, et cetera, et cetera. The Salt Creek History Open House was canceled. Didn't we talk about that
high
last
water,
week?
Right.
Due to high water, and that's still not down. Probably not going to be for a while. And
I'm guessing they'll have... They'll do it in March or something. But
It's not going to happen this month, it doesn't look like. In any case, that's about all the new stuff that I have from the DNR. It's just that time of year where you don't see a lot of outdoor news. I do have a little news tidbit that comes out of Business Week magazine.
Well, we got to take a quick break, so why don't you hang on to that for just a minute?
Okay.
And I'm going to give the weather, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors with Don Jordan and me, Rich Reardon, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
We'd like you to know that this is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 109.7 in Brown County, and 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org. Right now, it is 43 degrees in downtown Bloomington, and today we have a chance of showers, then showers likely again. It's going to be showers and breezy tonight, so plenty of rain all day today. Tomorrow it's going to lighten up a little bit, but it's going to get a little cooler. Today we got a high of 59. Tomorrow, Sunday, will be 42, and then we're looking right around the 40s the rest of the week, lows around the 20s, and kind of normal for this type of year. I'm glad it's not much colder, but anyway, that about does it. We'll be back in just a moment.
It ain't a bunch of beans they serve in the Navy. It's bacon and eggs, biscuits and gravy. Biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs, whole pot of coffee down to the dregs. When I get out of bed, my belly big. For biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs, that's biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs.
Yeehaw!
Hey, now that's a toe tapper.
That is
a toe tapper. Where did that song come from?
I don't remember. I got it years ago, and I've been playing it for, I don't know, 10, 15 years now.
It's great. It's just perfect for our show.
It is a good one, and Buddy Bill used to always make those biscuits and gravy out at Buddy Bill's Bait Barn in the day.
I think he's still known to make some. I'm not sure how many he makes.
Yep.
But I know he's still eats biscuits.
He was awful good at it, so.
Biscuits and gravy, hard to beat.
Yeah.
There's what is hard to do is find a place that makes good biscuits and gravy. You know, there's a few mom and pops around, but not very many, not like there used to be. There used to be little restaurants all around Bloomington, and most of them are gone. You probably remember Bender's downtown, and, well, they're Gibb and Denzel's out in the south by the high school.
And what a shocker about Hinkle's now.
Oh, yes, that was terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I didn't go there, like, every week anymore, but I at least went once a month to get a Hinkle's.
Yeah.
You know? And just to be reminded what Bloomington used to be like, I guess.
Yeah.
But the guy who ran the place died.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that stood there and took your money, you know, when you ordered your two-mop. That's mustard, onion, pickle, in case you didn't know that. And I'm really sorry to see him go down. I hope that on the Facebook page where they were talking about this, most people seem to think that somebody would step up and reopen Hinkle's. I sure hope they do, because it's a tradition and would be sorely missed by...
Well, I think the problem was that it was his father that originally opened the whole thing and
Leon.
Ran it for years.
Yes.
And that's who I remember most. And then he died young. His son was only like 45 or 47 or something like that.
He was fairly young.
And so that was kind of a shocker. But I think they said at the time it was like, who will? There isn't really anybody else in the family to take it over. So I don't know what they'll do. But I would hope they'd hire somebody and get that going, because that's a Bloomington tradition. I'd hate to lose.
At least... find a buyer who will keep it operating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just can't imagine Bloomington without Hinkle's. It's kind of like Bloomington without Kleindorfer's.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Kleindorfer's Hardware is the last of its kind in these parts.
Yeah.
They have everything, literally everything.
Well, you know, my favorite part of Hinkle's, besides the hamburgers and the cheeseburgers and whatever you could get there, was their sign.
Which one?
In the front window, they got they got one that says open, and then they just move the N to the other side.
Yeah.
And it says nope.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the most, I don't know.
That was pure Leon, I think.
That was just beautiful.
That was his attitude.
That reminded me of Bloomington for many years.
And, you know, they always closed when student on spring break.
Mm-hmm.
And they... Of course, they're going to be close spring break this year, I guess. But we hope they're open after that.
Yeah, I really hope they do get back here.
Sure do hope they're open. Well, let's see, what else is going on?
You were saying you had some kind of...
Oh, I got a little notice here. If you're interested in being a campground host, you know what those are,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the person who supposedly helps you out, you know, tells you what to do, where to pay, et cetera, et cetera. And these people stay in the campground all year long. So campground hosts are needed at DNR properties, it says right here.
Hmm.
Several of Indiana's state parks, state forests, state recreation areas are looking for volunteers to serve as campground hosts in exchange for free camping during their service. Hosts work a minimum of 20 hours a week. Volunteer period length varies at properties based on the number of applicants and the amount of type of work required.
Hmm.
Properties are looking for dedicated campers who enjoy working outdoors as well as with people and DNR staff.
Hmm.
A complete list of site availability and detailed information about hosting duties is available at, you got your pencil? Okay, here it goes, stateparks, one word, .in.gov/2404.htm. Gosh, you want me to go through that again?
I think you could probably Google it and find it.
Okay, yeah, you probably can, so I don't read it again. You have to complete a volunteer application to be eligible, and you can download that application form from another place. Well, you can probably get the application form address when you go to the state parks to get information on it. Let's just leave it that way.
Cause yeah.
Writing these internet addresses out is pretty difficult over the radio. And anyway, there you go. Want to be a campground host? Free camping.
Well, I've always seen seemed like kind of a cool thing for a retired couple to do or something. That's usually who you'll see there with a RV and, you know, nice thing to do. I don't know if I'd want to do it all year round, but don't let me put that thought in your mind. If you want to do it, go for it.
Well, the thing is which property that you end up on. Now, you end up at a state park like Brown County State Park. You're going to be one busy campground host.
Yeah.
And the same thing with McCormick's Creek and Spring Mill. The really popular places, you're going to have a bigger workload, and they may have more than one campground host to help you out.
Sure.
So, anyway.
Those people out at Hardin Ridge have it made, man. I tell you, they...
Oh, yeah.
That's a beautiful spot.
Yes, it's never... Well, it is full. It is full from time to time, but very seldom is Hardin Ridge packed with people. Because it's on the other side of the lake.
Well, they've done some good work there. It's a beautiful spot, they keep it up fairly well, so it is a nice one. I wouldn't recommend anybody goes there, when I'm going to go. But other than that, I think it's a good place.
Well, that campground, Hardin Ridge, and the one down at Salina Tipsaw in the Hoosier National down south, Right on 37, heading down towards Tell City. Those are the two best campgrounds in Indiana, I believe. There may be some other really good ones, but I've been to most of them, and those two are head and shoulders above all the rest.
Isn't there one down south you really like, too?
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, that's the one you're talking
Salina
about?
Salina and Indian Lake.
Yeah.
It's just right across I-64. So if you take 37 all the way down there, make sure you make the turn in English, or you'll be in trouble. And you have to go on 64 for a little ways, and then as soon as you get, it's just a little short distance from English. It's just off of I-64, about 2 or 3 miles. You really can't miss it. There's a big sign out on the road. And it's on the way to Tell City, so you can even go down to Tell City and see a place you've probably never seen before, on the river. Tell City on the river, river country.
Is there some other things close to that? I mean, can you go out to dinner and find, isn't there a few towns around there that I remember?
Well, there's some towns off of Indiana 64. It might be a little bit of a drive. But, Leavenworth is east of there.
Mm-hmm.
There's that Overlook restaurant sets up on the bluff overlooking the Ohio River. Many people go there.
Yeah, that's a nice place.
It's very popular. And everybody who's been there always remembers it because it's such a nice view. And it might not be your five-star cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's got fried chicken and mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
You can find something to eat there. Okay. Anybody interested in reserve turkey hunt permits?
I'm sure there are.
Okay. Well, folks, here we go. Turkey hunters can apply for a reserve turkey hunt online by visiting hunting.in.gov. Boy, that's simple. Hunting.in.gov. To February 4th to March the 22nd, click on the Reserved Hunt Info link. The online method is the only way to apply. No late entries will be accepted. Applicants must possess a valid hunting license for the species they wish to hunt. Well, I guess that's turkeys in this case.
Right.
The application process is now consolidated into the online services website, along with licenses, check-in game, and HIP, H-I-P registration for you duck hunters. A DNR online account is not required to apply. Hunts without registration fees will follow the same process as those with a fee. For hunts with no fee, you still will be asked to add to cart, proceed to checkout, and place order. If the transaction is zero, you will not be asked to pay. Well, that's good. That's good. For draw hunt results, there is a click here link on the homepage. You know, a lot of these reserved hunts, you got to draw, get a number, you got to show up and get drawn to get one of the permits. There is a click here link on the homepage, or you can log into your own online services account if you have one, which they said you don't need.
Right.
Okay. Hunters are selected through a computerized random drawing. Drawing results available at another long internet address, which I assume you can get from that same place, that reserved hunt link I gave you a little bit ago. Click on the link in reserved hunt box to see the status of your hunt registrations within 2 weeks after application deadlines. That's March 21st, by the way, or 22nd. So you got till the 22nd. That's the end right there. Here's the dates for the hunts this year. Atterbury, which people around here might go to, we got two weekends, April 24th, 26th, April 27th, 29th. Now, I don't have any idea what the Aukiki Wetland Conservation Area is. Have you ever heard of the Aukiki?
Aukiki, no.
Never. That sounds like it would be in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Then we got the Big Oaks National Wildlife Refuge, which I'm not sure where that is either, and the Chinook Fish and Wildlife Area up north, Crosley Fish and Wildlife Area over east, Deer Creek Fish and Wildlife Area, which I'm not sure, Fairbanks Landing, that's over on the White River, Glendale, which is down south of here, down towards Washington, Indiana, and at the Goose Pond. You can hunt the Goose Pond, April 24th, 26th, April 27th, 28th. They're all on the same date, it looks like. We also have Hillenbrand over in the east part of the state, Hovey, which is down south, Roush Lake and Wildlife, I think that's Terre Haute, Jasper Pulaski up northwest Indiana, Kingsbury, LaSalle, Mississinewa Lake, Muscatatuck National Wildlife Refuge. I'm just, you know, there's so many of them. It looks like they're all having a reserved hunt. Let's just put it that way.
Everybody is
having a reserved hunt for turkeys this year. I haven't seen a lot of turkeys. Have you seen a lot of turkeys?
I've seen a few.
Have you?
Yeah.
Out in, around Harrodsburg there?
Yep.
Well, I haven't seen any at all so far this year. We used to see a lot.
Wasn't too long ago, I had two fly right in front of my car.
Oh, that'd be a thrill.
On 37 while I was doing about 65 mile an hour. So.
That'd make a real mess on you.
That would be a mess. Oh, I lucked out because they
break your windshield.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be dangerous. But watch for them because they will get out on the highway, too.
I've had them attack my truck driving down the road. No kidding.
Really?
Yeah. Driving out to the Arlington Road one day. Here's this turkey out in the road. And I rolled down the window and looked out and said something to it, and it charged me.
Oh, boy.
You know? It attacked my truck. So I must have been a young male full of testosterone.
All right.
But anyway, that's just a reminder. Spring's coming up here. We got turkey hunting coming up. We've definitely got crappie hunt fishing starting already. Mm-hmm. And bass, like I told you at the start of the show, if you ever wanted to catch a big bass, at Lake Monroe especially, March is the month. March is the month because there's more 7-pound bass caught in the month of March than any other month, and it's not even close, really. It's this is it, the number one month coming up. If you're a bass fisherman, that's the time to go.
Would you think it would be easier on a year like this when the water's pretty high?
Well, water height doesn't make so much difference as sunlight.
Yeah,
as they want, you know, the shallow water warms up, bang, just like that. So you go out, look around the lake on that in this high water, look in those back areas that are exposed to the sun, and your chances of catching a bass are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
They come up in that shallow water, especially if you find a place, if you got a locator, you know. If you can find a place that's real shallow like that with, you know, nice clear water on it and sun beating down on it, and it drops off on each side, say it's a point, to a nice 15-20 foot of water with lots of weeds, That'd be the ideal place to spinnerbait across that shallow water and catch yourself a nice big largemouth.
Yeah.
If you want one.
Well, this is the time of year I like going on the north side of the causeway there where it's a little bit quieter. And
well, that's always good up there. Of course, hey, by the way, you see they've been announcing more stuff about this big logging operation they're going to do up in the Middle Fork. They're calling it the South Fork, but everybody around here calls it the Middle Fork,
right.
Salt Creek.
Yeah.
And that's this new thing they announced the other day where they're going to cut and burn everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2,500 acres. That's out of 5,000 they're going to work over. So, you know, you got to wonder about how the how muddy the water is going to be up in there when this logging starts. And I don't know how. They haven't been too good at keeping the sediment out of the streams with highway work around here. So.
Hey, with that, I got to cut you off because we're about done here.
Gee, that went fast.
It sure did.
Well, thanks, Rich. Good
and I hope to see Buddy Bill there next week, and good to see you, Don. And
okay, bud.
We'll be back next week.
We'll see you.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Inside Outdoors is brought to you by Morrison's Appliances and Service, serving Monroe County since 1954 at 900 West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington, Indiana, and all with eco-friendly service, pickup, and delivery. For more info, visit morrisonsappliancesandservice.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don, and Rich.
So thanks, everybody, for listening and tuning in this morning, and so we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.